appreciate the opportunity to be here. I do the member satisfaction survey for a large Medicaid health plan in Los Angeles, California. And we have a survey that we do every couple of years of provider groups, trying to get a large enough sample to be able to say something to the provider groups directly. Some states and some locations have maybe 3-4 provider groups that serve their population for Medicaid. LA County is unusually complex. We have about 7,000 providers that our members can reach in some way through some route. So we have about 70 different provider groups that we track consistently. But the only ones with enough sample to do this survey on were the 39 in this study, the 39 provider groups. I should say that if anyone is here from LA County and Medicaid eligible, I'm not trying to sell insurance to you. So the following personal financial relationships, I'm the statistician at LA Care Health Plan, and we're a public entity with commercial insurers that we partner with to rent their provider network to see our members. And I will follow this order for the presentation. Learning objectives, I'll cover a little later in the presentation in detail. Background on LA Care, we're mostly Medicaid urban, 2/3 pediatric, although that's changing as California mainstreamed the dual eligibles and the seniors and people with disabilities. We're seeing a lot of adults come into the health plan, which is a challenge because now we have two populations using a provider network designed for moms and kids. So we had to move quickly to recontract with people who could serve the older members. We're about 21% of Medicaid in California. These are 2009 numbers. I haven't updated yet, but we're about 2.1% of Medicaid managed care nationally in one health plan, and there are two health plans covering Medicaid in Los Angeles County, so it's a large county with many different languages that we serve. In California, they call them threshold languages. The 10 that we are required to cover are the ones listed up there. So interpreter services are obviously important to our members. The PASS survey, PASS is Patient Assessment Survey. It's a survey we borrowed from Pacific Business Group on Health. Dana Safran and the other author works for PBGH. We got permission to use their survey, so we imported it, and it was a nice survey. It resembles what's called the Clinician and Group Survey for CAPS. So now the two are virtually the same survey. We surveyed two mail waves, 39 provider groups, sent out 49,000, 16,000 complete, 32.9% response rate, and so forth. The survey process, I won't go into this kind of detail, but it is illustrated as to how we handled the survey. We added some questions that weren't naturally on the survey. The first year out, we got permission to add some pages to the survey. So one of the more active groups at our health plan is the Culture and Linguistics Department. And they had several questions they contributed, and those are the ones I'll use for the presentation. There are two approaches to analyzing barriers. One is provider-oriented, where we believe patients don't get providers, don't get interpreters because the doctors and staff don't want to interrupt their workflow. So that's one strong possibility as to reasons people don't get interpreter services. This survey was designed to detect any patient-level barriers or issues. Did the patient even ask for the interpreter services? Because otherwise, if we don't know from the patient, we're guessing, or it's anecdote-driven. And so the strength of the survey is we can tell from the members, what are they really experiencing? Did they ask for, did they get one? Were they refused, and so forth. So I'm pursuing number two there, the second level. Got my numbering odd there. These are the three questions. We added two, preferred spoken and written language, to track just basic needs for interpreters. And the three questions that matter for this study are Q51, 52, and 53. Did you or your child need a professional interpreter to help you speak with your child's doctors, clinic staff, or pharmacist? So that establishes need. Next question was, when you asked for one, when you needed one and asked for one, did you ask them for an interpreter? Did you ask the clinic staff? And then the third one is, did you get one? And so those three together kind of establish a case for, is it a patient problem or is it a doctor problem? So it's a handy set. This is worded for children. There are two versions of the survey, one for children 0 to 17.9 on the anchor date for the survey, and adults are 18 and above on that same anchor date. So we get two snapshots of each provider group. For these, I'm using in this presentation unweighted results. It's designed more for an intervention at the provider group level to say for the typical patient at the typical provider, is there a problem? So that's what these statistics speak to. In this, looking at each question in isolation, those who needed an interpreter were about 40% of adults and about 66% of parents of children. And asked for an interpreter, about 34% for the adults and 59% for the pediatric patients. So that clearly the need is among the immigrant population, generally Spanish-speaking, wanting interpreters, needing interpreters, even though Spanish is a fairly common language in the county. And many clinics do have Spanish-speaking individuals, but it doesn't count as medical-grade interpretation. They wouldn't necessarily know the medical terminology. They wouldn't necessarily know insurance terms to explain the coverage to people. So there are two kinds of complexity in interpretation for medical interpretation. The next one, an odd statistic fell out of that. Patients who needed interpreters but didn't request one, that suggests a member level education needed. Because if they didn't ask for one, if they asked for one and didn't get one, then we point at the doctor and say, oh, we need to intervene with them and train them. But in this case, at least about 6 to 8% need some intervention to suggest they may not know the right in California to ask for an interpreter. And they may not know, their doctor may not know. We provide the service for telephonic interpretation. We provide it free of charge to the clinic. So there's no financial barrier to them using this. It's purely a workflow barrier, or a perceived workflow barrier. I wonder how many, if they tried it, would find it's pretty straightforward, because the services that do this telephonically, they are quite, I've been inside one, and they're quite on top of trying to get that call on the line. So their people often work at home, but they're obligated to certain office hours where they're reachable by phone, not with a child crying in the background. So they're on call for this kind of service, and they measure the time it takes to get on the phone talking to the doctor and patient. Got an interpreter finally. The adult population, there was a misadministration part of it that the statistics didn't look trustworthy to me. I need to do some more testing, so I won't present the adult side here on Q51. Pediatric only, about 36% were kind of an inferior sort of answer, that they had never, almost never, sometimes got an interpreter, which is inferior service. Those who usually, almost always, or always got an interpreter, 64%. So that's the good news. The bad news is the 36%. Now the findings, kind of combining those as a set of questions together, logically chained, for the... Oops, wrong button. Okay, so of those who needed an interpreter, asked for one, and got one, 17% were in that situation. So that's the bad news part. The good news part is the 83% who got one when they needed one, asked for one, they got one. So that's good. The question, a suspicious person with medical training in your field should ask, what does that mean? Did the members know what a competent interpreter is? Was this just the front office clerk who happens to know Spanish? Do they know medical interpreting? So the good news is 83% got some kind of interpreter service. We don't know the answer to how many got competent interpreter service. The questionnaire itself, we define what a professional interpreter is, and we use the term throughout, professional interpreter, hoping that the member would get it, that that's not just somebody speaking conversational Chinese or conversational Armenian off the street, that that needs to be somebody who understands medical terminology and insurance terminology to explain their coverage to them. So a little question mark there. So I like the finding, but I'm a little suspicious. I want to get inside that in later surveys. Q51, got an interpreter when needed and did not request one. Again, that's an interesting thing. It appears that the clinic staffs are doing the right thing. What we would want them to identify when they think the member needs an interpreter, even if the member fails to ask for it. And so in this case, these people were getting an interpreter, and the green area at least. The red area is uncertain. Maybe they didn't really need one. But on the green area, clearly, somebody's going the extra mile to give them an interpreter. Now, whether that's getting in the way or not, maybe they didn't need it or were offended at being put in front of an interpreter on the telephone. So I don't know whether that's a positive or negative, but it strikes me that at least somebody at the clinic is trying to comply with our contractual obligations to provide this service. So that was good. Among patients who didn't need or request interpreters, the sum times always is 37%. And paradoxically, among patients who said they didn't need an interpreter, report asking for an interpreter but received an interpreter sometimes are always 92.7%. So that's good news. What do we do with those findings? This doesn't take language into account. This is an attempt to use similar findings from the survey to say, given that we know a language preference, what kind of provider do we contract with to serve them best? And so this is from a separate analysis that we did, where we looked at staff model plans where the members and the facilities are all owned by a health plan, and the medical group is owned by a health plan. They consider that staff model, and they own the facility. They usually have an electronic health record, so they seem to deliver the best service in our network. And then, but not everyone can be in that. It's a small set of people that will actually get into that small health plan that allows that. But there are medical groups which are partial staff model, and they did about average. But the IPAs, this is the odd part. Normally the IPAs, independent provider associations, are the ones with the least centralized capability. They're just a loosely knit association where the association covers billing and some ordering of services and so forth. So this is the opposite of what you would expect, that they have this concentration. I shouldn't really color it green. It's not any positive or negative news. It just says that our problem is isolatable. It's focusable. The IPAs tended to be in areas where no one else wanted to be. And the clinics are another odd case. I need to investigate deeper to make certain what I believe about them is true. I believe these are clinic, by definition in this study, was a clinic where a member is directly assigned to the clinic, not to a provider. And that's the definition of clinic here. They appear to be in the areas of the county that are least served, outlying areas or inner city core. And so that's where the need would be. So taking the finding on interpreters, my next step has to be break down the interpreter access questions by this, and I'm not that far along in the research yet, but that will give me targetability, because in taking action on this, targetability is everything. The findings, most respondents got interpreters, so the upshot is basically on the earlier slides. There's some positive indication they're getting interpreters when they need them, but also some question marks as to whether they're getting competent interpretership, and my survey wasn't capable of discerning that out. Limitations of the data. For my use, I need to weight the data eventually to weight it back to the health plan at large to say, what is our average member getting? Whereas this is oriented around doing interventions with provider groups. The survey is accurate for that without weighting. But I need, like we say in medical care, the painful part is the weighting, so I need to go through that step. Recap, reforms, best practices, reforms that aid PCMH and ACO as trends also include interpreter access. So that those movements are, at least PCMH includes interpreter access explicitly. And ACOs, we have the option of including it for accountable care organizations in our incentive programs to say, okay, you scored well on this, you get more of an incentive money. And so that would be my next push, is to try to get the people who run the incentive program to say, this matters, and to try to tie it into ratings they're trying to improve, describe the role of interpreter access and so forth. I'm not sure I'll go into all of the detail. Language barriers either block access. So I think to this audience, it's not hard to make the case the need for interpreters, why that's important, so that people understand the service they're getting, understand the choices they're making that affect their life. Third, discuss the proportion of patients. In our Medicaid population, more than half of the adults reported not needing interpreters, and most adults did not request them. So it's clearly the parents of children, that's where the need is greatest for our population. The one surprise was there's a modest subset of members listing language combinations that didn't include English, like Vietnamese and Farsi, for example, is not one I would have expected to see because they're widely separate on the globe. There are a couple of different odd combinations, so it says we need to pay attention to the needs in detail. Compare interpreter access among language groups, the Medicaid population, adults, demographic groups. Spanish is the likely driver of the interpreter need in our population, given the percents. The other languages together comprise about 6% of our population, other than English and Spanish. For adult and child, there's clear difference that the children need the service more. And the willingness of Medicaid members to request, the willingness appears strong, which people without this study were guessing at. Was it the providers? Was it the members? Did the members even ask? Now they don't have to wonder. We know how often the members are asking, so it's both. We want to push both. Potential barriers. Setting up a face-to-face telephonic interpretation can impact clinic workflow, so that's a barrier. I would prefer to survey providers to find out for sure what their barrier is, because a lot of planning is based on guessing, and I don't like the guessing part of that. Demonstrate the impact. That's pending the weighted analysis yet to come. Methods for making the findings actionable. I'll go into that in some detail in the next set of slides. Actionability. This is supplied by my colleague, and I'll wrap this very quickly. Basically, we're looking for first, in, because everyone's operating under tight constraints, we look for something where we can piggyback a service on piggyback something to do with interpreter access on top of other things we're already doing. For example, if we're sending a member newsletter, education on the rights to request an interpreter would be a logical add-on to that member newsletter. Information and reporting, at least we take the findings of the surveys to the appropriate committees. That hasn't occurred yet, so that's step two, is get the detail in front of the doctors to let them know they have a need. The next one would be auditing. The culture and linguistics group does have the potential of auditing the provider groups to see if they're following the protocol for offering interpreter services. At least now we have a way to target which provider groups are performing least well on that. We offer CME on some programs. Interpreter access training can give CME to the doctors and nurses, so at least we have them as an audience to promote the importance of this. And incentivizing is the final one. We have a P4P, pay for performance program. Since there's money on the table, if we can put it behind interpreter access, that would give the clinics and the provider groups a reason to promote this. And I appreciate your time. Thank you. And Hongli, thanks very much for reshuffling to allow me to be at the other poster.
At this point, I would like to say thank you to all the presenters. They did a very nice job on the presentation, and I'm very satisfied. Very nice. It's my first time doing it, and if there was anything didn't go right, I hope that you would let that slide. Okay, it's my first time, but I'm very happy with the session today. With that said, any questions for the presenters? Yes.
Studies, but so you've
kind of a supporting note. I have a cold, so I'll make use of the amplifier. In 2011, we gave a presentation similar to this survey, but we had included questions on cultural competence, trying to tie it to something that healthcare managements care about that would affect their ratings or their income. And one of the studies used to study the quality of healthcare is called HEDIS. We established a link between the cultural competence as rated by the member of their doctor and their willingness to adhere to recommendations, to medical recommendations. It's a small effect. It's not a large effect like you would want to see, but it's a small but provable effect. So that there's at least some attempt through a data set that's common across health plans that might be a possibility for researching that.
Any other questions with the presenters? Okay, then thank you for your presence, and I hope to see you next year.